Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. Hello, Carter. How are you, man?
Man, doing well. August, what a month, huh? On fire.
Flying high. Three straight victories for Sporting Kansas City. Three straight shutouts for the Sporting KC defense, vaulting themselves right back into the conversation for first place in the West and maybe at least a whisper back in the conversation for the Supporter Shield, right?
Yeah, I'd call it a whisper. It's a lot of work to do, but certainly
need some help.
They need some help, but they've put themselves, at least like you said, into the conversation with three really good results in a row here.
All right, so we've got a busy show coming up for you today. We are going to have a very special guest, a couple of very special guests on. If you have followed Sporting KC on social media, or really just the world of sports on social media, you will likely have seen a video that was first tweeted out by the Sporting KC account of Johnny Russell giving his game-worn jersey to a young lady who had been holding up a sign apparently for the entire 90 minutes of the game that said, "Johnny, it's my ninth birthday." And the reaction of this young lady is absolutely priceless. The words that I will use to describe it won't do it justice. So you've got to go to the Sporting KC Twitter handle if you haven't already seen it. She breaks down in tears. It's an incredible moment. It's, to me, all the things that are right with sports when you have those types of interactions between players and fans. And we're going to talk to that young lady on the show and her mom. Understand that I believe they're in from Omaha, from Nebraska, to watch the game. So they're back home. We're going to attempt to talk to them on the phone on the show today to find out what that moment was like for them and how it all came together. And then in the next segment, we're going to talk with a good old friend of ours, Cal Williams, former play-by-play voice of Sporting Kansas City and current play-by-play voice of Minnesota United, as that's the next opponent for Sporting Kansas City. I know you had a chance to visit with Cal a little bit when we were out on the West Coast. We happened to be both in L.A. at the same time last week, and you got to see him, but it'll be good to catch up with him and talk a little Minnesota United as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I can handle two out of three weekends with Cal Williams. But yeah, that was fun. They were out there playing the Galaxy same time Sporting was playing LAFC. So got to meet up with him on the beach and enjoy a few cocktails and talk about old times. But yeah, I'll be looking forward to talking to him about Minnesota United. Third time that Sporting will play them. They're the only team that Sporting plays three times this year, obviously.
One of those quirks of the MLS schedule with the number of teams that are in the league and two conferences right now. And if you're Sporting Kansas City, maybe that seems like a pretty good deal. This Minnesota United team struggling right now, but we also know that nothing can be taken for granted in any week in MLS. So, and especially when there's that much familiarity, the two teams know each other that well. So we're going to preview Minnesota United coming up. But first, let's take a look back to the weekend that was. Sporting Kansas City, as I mentioned, third victory in a row, and it's another shutout. I'll go ahead and throw out a couple of things to maybe keep in mind so that we don't get too big of a head in terms of what the team has accomplished here of late. But circumstances have been in favor of Sporting Kansas City over these three games. Carter, they got the benefit of a red card that completely changed the game in Houston, then a couple more.
Early on, 14th minute.
Yeah, so that obviously changed the complexion of that game. And now they've played two Western Conference teams in which the schedule makers did Sporting Kansas City a massive favor. Now, part of that was Sporting KC did themselves a favor, maybe by bowing out of the Open Cup, because they didn't have to play that midweek game that LAFC had to play. But LAFC was playing their third game in 7 days, and then the Portland Timbers were playing their third game in 8 days. I thought that the squad rotation on both teams was a factor in the game, and so we'll set that aside. But for me, Sporting Kansas City did all you could do or could ask them to do with those circumstances. They went out and they dominated two teams that are right in the running with them for playoff spots in the West.
Yeah, I think that's fair to put that on the outset that, you know, they're going to run a form that's really good with three good results, but they've had some stuff go their way, obviously. But with that being said, they still came into a game against a Portland team that is very good and very dangerous up top, especially. And they, I think, exacerbated how tired Portland were by how well they moved the ball Sporting Kansas City. And we heard that from Peter Vermes both at halftime and post game. And I think I heard it from a couple other guys as well. Tim Melia talked about it. He said he thought it was the best they've done all year, moving the ball laterally, side to side, east to west, and really stretching that Portland team and making them run. And, I mean, by the 60-minute mark or so, they just looked completely gassed, didn't they, Portland? I mean,
yeah.
They just moved the ball so well. And like Peter Vermes said at the end of the game, you know, when you make the ball do the work, the ball doesn't get tired, but the other guys do.
So let me use an analogy. You're a basketball guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I know you love the NBA, so you don't see too much zone defense in that regard.
It's
but
true.
What the Portland Timbers were trying to do, what we see a lot of teams try to do to Sporting Kansas City when they come to Children's Mercy Park, I'll equate to a zone defense in basketball. And, I listen to Bill Self talk a lot about it. And when he talks about how you attack a zone, his phrase is always that the ball can't stick. It's got to move quickly. And the next pass doesn't always have to lead to the basket. But what you can't have is the guy at the top of the key catches the ball, looks left, looks right, looks left, and then makes a pass, and then repeat that same situation over and over again. It's got to move fast, force those rotations from the defense. And the reason that sounds simple, but it doesn't happen a lot, is that when a team is packed in a zone, you have time to hold the ball and decide where you want to pass it. And it can kind of lull you into a sense of relaxation. You don't feel the pressure to move the ball as quickly as you might if you're getting pressured when you have the ball. I thought that's exactly what Peter Vermes was basically telling his team this entire week, was don't let the ball stick. It's got to move quickly. Yes, be patient, but don't hold on to it. Don't stand on the ball, or else their defense is going to be able to rotate to everything that you do. You were on the field for it. How good was that in terms of the way they approached that part of the game on Saturday night?
Yeah, it seemed to be an emphasis, and you could tell the way the coaching staff was talking from the sideline, trying to get them to move the ball quickly and quickly. And I think Tim Melia said it, like I said, he said it the best. He thought it was the best they'd done all year, and it looked like that to me as well. It really was moving from side to side, and as a result, they really had Portland on their heels. I think Marco Farfan, the left wing back, he was like a wing back for – maybe 12 minutes, and then they were just moving the ball too quickly, and he was having to chase that runner down his side so often that he wound up being just a left back, and it really became five at the back. And then once that happened, when they moved that ball quickly, those three midfield guys for Portland, there's just too much ground for them to cover, and they were good at that. I thought Sporting Kansas City moving the ball quickly, and you saw it, I think, in a couple of the goals where it came into the central area, and Diego Rubio was finding himself in all types of space because they moved the ball so quickly that those guys couldn't recover and pick him up.
Okay, so you mentioned Diego Rubio. Last week on this show, you were still in California. When I opened up the show, I talked a lot about Rubio's performance against LAFC, and we, of course, talked about it on your pregame show on Fox Sports Kansas City as well, from the standpoint that he had an assist that was obviously a massive point in the game, but everything else that he did in that game in Los Angeles, Peter Vermes saying that it was the best game he'd ever played. He backs it up by scoring two goals in this one in, let me make sure I have the stats right, 73 minutes this time around. Two goals, but what stood out to me as much, five shots, four shots on goal. Now, he told you after the game that was a major priority for him going in.
Yeah, he said it was funny how he said. He said, "You know, I like to pass," which was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he likes to get involved in the buildup a lot, and we've seen him drop deep to try and get on the ball and try and get his teammates in around him and get involved in the game. But he said to me after the game that his teammates have been telling him to shoot more because he's coming into the game with what was it, 6 to 10 shots in there, something like that, and he's shooting really efficiently, obviously, but they want him to shoot a little bit more. And sounds from those stats that's exactly what he did. And to further that, Peter Vermes after the game was saying, you know, he was really in and around the box and in between the 18. And that's his area, is what Vermes said. And I think he did a good job of he still was active the way he likes to be and getting involved, but for the most part, he was able to stick within that the 18-yard box and a few more shots, and you can tell he's got that ability, especially that first goal. I mean, the second goal is a fantastic finish as well,
mm-hmm.
but he's got that ability just outside the area to have a strike from distance, and I think his teammates will be continuing to tell him to shoot a little bit more.
Yeah, so when he said that to you, I was aware of the stat going into the game that as a starter, Diego Rubio had not put a shot on goal all season long. Now, you know, let's be a little bit fair. It's not like he started a ton of games. He had started four games going into Saturday. But in those four starts, he hadn't put a shot on goal. But I wasn't aware of how few shots he'd even taken in the games he'd come off the bench. Going into Saturday's game, he had not taken more than one shot in a single game. And I'm not talking shots on goal. I'm talking shots. He hadn't taken more than one shot.
Yeah, wow.
This is a guy that had scored four goals on the season, yeah. Right, going into Saturday. So when you put it in that context and say this guy hasn't taken more than a shot in a single game all year, starter or off the bench, he puts up five in this one, four of them on frame, and he gets the two goals. All of a sudden, you start saying to yourself, man, what's the efficiency like for this guy when it comes to minutes, when it comes to shot attempts? Well, here's a couple of numbers for you now. If you use the minimum, and we can set the minimum wherever we want, so this is a little bit of fun with numbers, but if you set the minimum at five goals scored on the season, and I think that's fair, that shows you're at least an attacking player who scores on a relatively consistent basis, Diego Rubio leads all MLS players in goals per 90 minutes. He is at 1.21 goals per 90 minutes ahead of Joseph Martinez, who's going to shatter the MLS record for goals scored. Now, does that mean that if he played as many minutes as Joseph Martinez, he would score at that type of clip? I don't think any of us would make that assertion, but it just puts into context how many goals he's producing for Sporting relative to the minutes played. So he's number one in that category. He's also number one in the category of goals per shots. And that's something that Sam Kaufman put out in Beyond the Box Score. Make sure I quote the stat the way that MLS describes it. They refer to it as scoring percentage. But he is scoring 0.6 of a goal per shot attempt. So for every shot attempt, he's scoring 0.6 goals. And again, it makes sense because he hasn't shot that much. But mm-hmm. you can understand why his teammates have said, hey, man, you know, get yourself in a position to, because one of the things that we are seeing is when the guy is in a position to shoot, he is an absolutely lethal finisher for this team.
Yeah, and those two finishes on Saturday proved it. And so I think those stats would back up his teammates in saying, hey, shoot more. Just mm-hmm. come in there and try and find a shot. And I think that's one thing that Daniel Shalloway's been good at throughout his career is trying to create his own shot at mm-hmm. times. And I think maybe Diego Rubio will look at this game and what his teammates have been saying and say, hey, maybe I can force it every once in a while just because I have that capability to produce something. And so, yeah, they're small sample sizes, obviously, comparative to a Joseph Martinez because he only has 500 or so minutes on the year. Mm-hmm. But you know, he's certainly coming back into his own, and I wonder maybe a couple signings coming in put his feet over the coals a little bit, and he's felt a little bit more pressure and is trying to keep his spot, and he's doing an excellent job at it at the moment.
Even if it's not pressure, if it's motivation,
yeah,
you know, maybe I need to go get goals. I need to be hungry for goals, and whether it's because he's staying in that area where he can score around the penalty area more often, or he's making sure to get back in that area after he makes those runs to get out of it. And what I think we've seen is he might not be a 90-minute guy. He might be a 75-minute guy. That might be his wheelhouse for what his engine can take running at that level. But with a guy like Christian Namath now being brought into the mix, he doesn't need to be a 90-minute guy all of a sudden. And now you got Christian Namath really eager to prove what he can do in the limited minutes that he's getting right now.
Yeah, and I think that competition for places will serve this team really well moving forward. And then you'll have Kyrie Shelton coming back in a couple of weeks. And the three guys, I think, are three very different options up top for Peter Vermes. And so it'll be curious if maybe he rotates based on a matchup type basis and how they'll play, how he thinks they'll have the ball. But, you know, Diego Rubio has always pressed well. And if he starts adding some more shots to that equation, it'll be tough to take this starting place away from him, even if you're Christian Namath.
Yeah, it could be a combination of form and fit in each game going forward, but certainly a great situation for Peter Vermes to be in. Sporting Kansas City, they're rolling right now. They've got 3 wins in a row, and they're taking on Minnesota United coming up. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with a couple of fans who had an unforgettable experience at Children's Mercy Park on Saturday night. That's as the Sporting Kansas City show continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Namath, through to Russell. Clear to goal. Johnny Russell puts it away. It's 3 goals and it's 3 points for Sporting Kansas City.
Well, there was a very special moment on Saturday night at Children's Mercy Park. And for my money, it was the kind of moment that makes Children's Mercy Park the special place that it is. Again, I'll direct people to Sporting KC on Twitter, where they have the pinned tweet of the video after the game of Johnny Russell giving a young lady his jersey after the game, and her reaction is just absolutely priceless. And we're lucky enough to have that young lady and her mom on the phone right now. Andrea White is mom, and Ireland is the daughter. Andrea and Ireland, are you there? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
So let me start with you, Andrea. First of all, when I watched the video, are you in the video? Are you the lady standing right next to Ireland with the cell phone out filming the whole thing?
Yeah, I was attempting to film it, yeah.
That was it. Tell me how this whole thing came together. You guys, from what I understand, you guys are in Council Bluffs, Iowa right now, which is right outside of Omaha. So tell me about it. You just came down for the weekend. Was this a birthday present for Ireland?
Yeah, so we've been Sporting KC fans for a long time, and we usually try to make several games every season, and this was probably our fourth or fifth game this season that we've been to. And we wanted to surprise her for her birthday and take her to a game. And I had contacted someone at Sporting KC to see about getting like a meet and greet. And they said, well, that probably wasn't going to happen, but maybe she could line up and see him when they go out to practice before the game, which she was able to do. And we were like, well, that's great, fantastic. She had a sign already made. She didn't even know we got down here Saturday that she was even going to the game or was even going to have a chance to even see him close up. So then we usually try to sit in the front row behind the goal because we know that the team always comes for one end of the field after the game. And that way maybe we could have a chance for him to see the sign and maybe just, you know, say hi, happy birthday, and, you know, kind of for a little special moment. But what he ended up doing was just beyond what we'd ever even imagined would happen. So it was just very special and very emotional. So,
So Ireland, how would you describe what was going through your mind when Johnny came over to give you that jersey?
Well, I would describe that when he was walking over, I'm like, is this really happening? Did they seriously do this for me? Mom, is he actually walking over here? I'm like, this is not even happening.
So, your mom said that they were going to surprise you. Did you know that you were coming down for the game? Was that what you wanted for your birthday?
Yeah, but I didn't know. My mom told me that my grandma couldn't come up to give me a present for my birthday. So, she told me that we were going down there to see her. And then she surprised me at lunch. She goes, me and your dad are going to a soccer game tonight. And I go, oh, can I go? She goes, yeah, happy birthday. You get to meet Johnny Russell.
So I assume Johnny Russell is your favorite player.
Yes.
How come he's your favorite player? When did you decide that, and why is he your favorite player?
So one day, Dad was on the couch watching TV, and I came over and I'm like, Dad, what soccer team? And he goes, this is Sporting Kansas City. And I go, who's that blonde guy that has the same number as me? He goes, oh, that's Johnny Russell. And then I started looking at his footwork, and I'm like, oh, I want to be like him someday. So I went out in the yard, and I started practicing all the footwork like him, and I'm still working on it to this day.
Wow. So are you a winger? I assume you play soccer. Do you play the same position as Johnny?
No, but I play soccer, and I'm a midfielder.
Okay, that's fine. The footwork is going to come out just fine for you there. So when he gave you the jersey, Ireland, you started crying. Were you aware that you were crying, and were you aware that so many people were watching you at that point?
So when I started crying, I'm like, oh, my gosh, Mom, are you seeing this? And I just thought that Mom, Dad, my sisters were watching. But then after the game, I figured out, oh, this is everywhere. Everybody must have watched it.
So did you hold on to that jersey the entire way back to Council Bluffs?
Yeah, I held on to it and I smelled it.
I can't imagine it smelled very good.
Oh, he has a ton of cologne on.
Oh, really? He didn't smell it. Oh, so I'm picturing a smelly, sweaty, body odor type jersey. You're telling me it smelled like cologne.
Oh, yeah. It smelled really good, and it still does, actually.
What? Can you guys identify the scent? I mean, I might rush out and buy some for myself. What?
We've actually joked about that. If we could somehow figure out what the smell is, and then we could keep spraying the jersey with it.
All right, we're going to do some reconnaissance on this. I'm going to talk to Johnny, and I'm going to find out exactly what type of cologne. I had no idea that he was Carter. Can you smell him on the sidelines when?
I never get that close. You guys are lucky.
He's got to smell like success, you know, when he walks out there.
Yeah, hard work. Uh huh.
So will you guys wash it? Like, what will you do with it now?
Well, so we've been asking a lot of people what we should be doing, because we want to frame it, obviously, and post some of these pictures and articles that have been going around with it, just to kind of memorialize it. And a lot of people say, yeah, you know, you should wash it just because the sweat, you don't know what the crystals and stuff are going to do. So I think we've kind of decided to wait till the good smell goes away, and then once it actually does start smelling like sweat, then we'll probably wash it very, very gently. And then we will get it framed.
All right. So, yeah, you got to wash it. You know, my recommendation, do not machine dry it. You got to air dry it, you know, because it's microfiber. That's important. that's my laundry tip. I'll talk to Kitman about that as well. He probably has some good instructions for.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, for how to take care of the jersey best. But Ireland, I want to ask you just about, you know, this experience for you in terms of, you were already a big Sporting Kansas City fan. What's it like for you now? I mean, I can't imagine how excited you are just to watch the next game and to be able to tell all your friends about what happened to you last weekend.
Yeah, so I did like Ronaldo more than Johnny Russell, and then I got home and I go, you know, I'm sorry to say, Ronaldo, but I mean, I like Johnny Russell way better than you now.
I guarantee Ronaldo's jersey smells like cologne, though. I will say that. I'm sure of that. Andrea, what about you for a mom? I mean, what you knew you were going to get her a heck of an experience by taking her to the game, and you were hoping to meet it, but to stand there and watch your daughter with that kind of a look. I mean, all of us that have kids, I think we dream of being able to do something for our kids that makes them that excited and happy. Can you describe what it was like watching that entire scene unfold?
You know, I really, the video explains it all more than words could ever explain it. I have watched that video over and over and over again every single day, and I still get teary-eyed. It's so powerful, and for those of us that know Ireland and know how passionate she is about soccer and where she wants to go with it in her life, just watching that video just says it all. It's the moment that we will never capture again, and you know, just how that just explains everything to her. And that, you know, even though someone as big as Russell, fans are what matters the most. You know, it's just showing the fans how you support them because they support you. And I think that's just a big statement for all athletes to understand, and especially someone as young as her, that it doesn't matter how big you make it in life, you still need to be grateful for those that help you get there.
Well, and I think that is one of the things that certainly makes me so excited. I was in that cauldron a lot of times before I ever started calling the games, and the interaction with the fans, between the players and fans, is something that this organization has gotten so right, and it's so special. I'm really glad that we all got to be a part of watching you guys have that special moment, because it was great for us to watch too.
Yeah, it's just very powerful and emotional.
Well, hey, guys, thank you so much for the time. Ireland, you keep practicing those Johnny Russell skills. I want to see you Megan players out there because he's like the master of the nutmeg right now when he plays. So I want to see that from you, and we look forward to seeing you on a field playing here sometime real soon. Okay, Ireland?
Okay.
All right, thanks, guys. Thank Have you. A good one.
Thank you, too.
All right, that's Andrea and Ireland White. How cool is that?
That was really fun, yeah. That was really cool. Internet famous now.
Now we got to find out what the scent
what
is
scent?
That Johnny Russell wears. He ought to have his own cologne by now. I mean, that's just the way that it rolls. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, another man who's never smelled anything but wonderful to me is Cal Williams, a man that not true. Maybe that's a stretch. Cal Williams, anyway, he's going to join us next to talk about Minnesota United on the Sporting Kansas City Show. Well, he's a good old friend of ours, and we're going to be seeing him this weekend because Cal Williams, longtime voice of Sporting Kansas City, now the voice of Minnesota United, is on the phone with us now to talk about this upcoming Western Conference matchup. It's always good, Cal, to get a chance to hear your voice, and this year we get to do it three times because of the quirk in the schedule. How are you, man?
Mate, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it, Carter, as well. I'm very well, enjoying the last flicker of sunshine that we have here in the Twin Cities before we have to deal with the abomination of snowfall that I'm sure is coming our way. But no, very, very good, thank you. And obviously looking forward to coming down to Kansas City this weekend.
Yeah, I guess winter is coming to Winterfell, isn't it?
Yeah, and let me tell you, it is absolutely brutal up here, the winter. Last year, I said, forget this, I'm about to England. There was no way. There was no way I was sticking around. You know, fortunately, the season was done and my duties were limited. So I thought to myself, well, there's no way. You know, fortunately, I had an opportunity to call some games, some championship and some Bundesliga games when I went back. But I just thought to myself, there's absolutely no way I'm sticking around here because it's so cold. I cannot even begin to describe, which I know is rather poor from a commentator's point of view, but I was walking around downtown with my fiance, and all of a sudden my beard started to feel very, very bizarre. What was actually happening was it was freezing and there were icicles coming off of my beard, and I don't think I've ever been in that situation before, chaps. So you know, the winters are brutal, but what I will say, the summers up here in the Twin Cities are absolutely gorgeous.
Well, you know the weather's bad if England seems like a good alternative from
reprieve.
A weather standpoint.
A good retreat. Yes.
But you're right. The summers and the falls are pretty beautiful up there. Let's talk about your team, Cal, because it's been a little bit of a rough summer here for Minnesota. You guys had a bit of an uptick a few weeks ago, but maybe just give us a thumbnail sketch in terms of where the club is right now.
I think at the moment, Nate, it's in a fairly precarious position. I think you're right in saying that earlier on in the year they were flying, particularly at home as well. And what they did is they took advantage of several teams that were on bad runs. I think when you look back at the game against Real Salt Lake, New England Revolution, Toronto FC, Minnesota United took full advantage of teams that were on a poor stretch. Darwin Quintero undoubtedly is at center stage of all of that up here. And we missed him dearly at FC Dallas last weekend. Had a little bit of a calf niggle, we understand. And I'm going to be intrigued to see if he's available this weekend against Kansas City. I hope so, because he's a player that really, really is undoubtedly the best player that Minnesota United have ever had since coming into Major League Soccer. He's obviously played the role of senior pest many a time in the CONCACAF Champions League and pushed aside the likes of Seattle Sounders and Montreal Impact, Toronto FC, on a regular basis with Santos Laguna and Club America. He's a different class. He really is. He's a level above most. We're very lucky to have him, but it doesn't half make a difference when he's not on the field. And as I said, against FC Dallas, Minnesota really, really missed him.
Cal, something you alluded to is the home and away split for Minnesota United, which is remarkable, I think. Obviously, most teams in the league are going to be a lot better at home than they are on the road. But Minnesota, 8 wins at home, which is up there in the Western Conference. It's more than Sporting has at home, actually, at the time right now. But 1-10-1 on the road is pretty absurd. How do you explain the just Jekyll and Hyde performance of this Minnesota United team?
Well, absurd is the right way to describe it, Carter. There's no doubt about it. I don't think anybody really knows the answer to this question, and it is something that we've posed to the coaching staff here for a long time, because last year the away record was abysmal as well, up until the final third of the campaign when they managed three wins. But it seems as though the answer to this question would arguably be worth more than $1 million, really. It's just nobody in this league has really cracked this case yet, have they? We haven't really had a team that has been as consistent as you would like to be on the road for several years. You know, you might have had a decent year on the roads in, you know, 2015 or whatever, but then if you go forward to 2016, it's abysmal. I mean, Sporting Kansas City went through it, didn't they, a couple of years ago, where they were absolutely woeful on the road, and then the next season they were okay again. So, honestly, Carter, I wish I had the formula. I wish I had the answer here, but I think if I did, I probably wouldn't be standing here outside the Minnesota United offices right now. And, you know, it is something that I think will curse a lot of Major League Soccer teams for a long time yet. I think the only obvious answer for me in terms of how you can really help this situation, and this is another debate for another day, but I can't believe we haven't gotten to the stage in this league yet where we have chartered flights. I mean, it's to me, when you have the array of superstars you have in this league now, and I know certain individuals have better treatment than others, but to the point now where we are and we don't have chartered flights, I think is borderline ridiculous. And, you know, hopefully the people who make all these decisions and are much smarter than I am can figure out some sort of way for this to happen sooner rather than later, because I think that would help really do moving forward. I think it would help a tremendous amount.
I mean, the distance traveled in this league is grueling, and that would be one way to at least minimize it a little bit, no doubt about it. We're visiting with Cal Williams as Minnesota United are coming to town this weekend. I want to ask you about a couple of personnel moves made by the team here during the summer transfer window. And the first one, look, we just got to see Christian Ramirez in LAFC make his debut against Sporting Kansas City last weekend, or 2 weekends ago now. And so he's gone from Minnesota United, and in comes Angelo Rodriguez, a Colombian designated player. He's played in 3 games for the Loons now, Cal. Hasn't scored yet. What can you tell us about him? What has he shown so far, and what is he still capable of showing?
I think it's a tremendous acquisition for this franchise, Nate. I don't think, and I wouldn't expect him to go out and out and score 15, 20 goals a season. I think in the right situation, you know, as he did with Tolima when they won the Apertura, it wouldn't surprise me if he got, you know, 12, 13 goals. But he's somebody who is very much one of these centre forwards who holds the ball up and likes to link up with the players that play behind him. Now, in Adrian Heath's preferred system, the 4-2-3-1, Minnesota United for a long time have lacked a centre forward like this, where they've needed the big body up front to be as big as they possibly can, and a weight for the three players behind the body to come and play and join in the attacking phase. Christian Ramirez was a tremendous centre forward, is a tremendous centre forward, and I like him a lot. I think he's going to score a boatload of goals at LAFC. There's no doubt about it, especially with the likes of Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, all putting the ball on a platter for him. I have no doubt that Ramirez will get a couple of goals this for the rest of the campaign. And then in 2019, I have no doubt Ramirez will get 15-plus goals in that team. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And I think moving him on, obviously, it sent shockwaves around the Minnesotan soccer community. I think it raised an eyebrow or two around the world of Major League Soccer as well. But, you know, there are a lot of different reasons as to why that trade was made. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, in this situation, Ramirez was a victim of the salary cap. He was on a fairly hefty wage. And after bringing in Angelo Rodriguez, as you mentioned, Nate, as a designated player, I just don't think there was the need to have somebody like Ramirez sitting on the bench. So, you know, I'm sure it's common knowledge now, they have an offer for him from a Liga MX team in the off-season, which I think they should have taken. They didn't. They chose to stick with him. And it wasn't as effective as I think that they thought it was going to be in terms of his play and fitting in the system again, giving it a second year. He was tremendous in 2017 with 14 goals with the likes of Kevin Molino and Ethan Finlay and Miguel Ibarra playing behind him. But, you know, I think him and Darwin Quintero were just starting to link up and do okay together. But the reason why Rodriguez was brought in is because, as I mentioned earlier, he's going to hold up the play. I don't think Rodriguez will score a boatload of goals in a manner that Ramirez will for LAFC. The main beneficiary here will be Darwin Quintero, because he's going to be the player that will run off of Angelo Rodriguez and also the wider players as well. Let's not forget Ethan Finlay and Kevin Molina are still yet to come back to this team. They won't be available until 2019, both out with ACL tears. But, you know, we've added Romario Ibarra, who looks a handful as well, the Ecuadorian international. We're not bad going forward. Minnesota United look decent going forward. It's just the other end of the field where the issue has been for the past 18 months.
And they make another signing, perhaps, to address that in the wonderfully named Fernando Bob. First of all, are you as big a fan of the name as I am?
Well, the one thing I'm looking forward to, Carter, is screaming Bob when he when he smashes one in from 30 yards. That's going to be quite intriguing.
So what's he going to bring to the team, and is there a chance we could see him this weekend?
You know, I don't know about that. The one thing he will bring, Carter, is he will bring balance amongst a plethora of other things. You know, he will bring distribution. He will bring discipline. He will bring a lot of things that has lacked this season for Minnesota United. I think it may have even been the last time I was talking to you chaps on this story radio show that I said that Minnesota United for a long time now have lacked a proper holding midfielder. Now, don't get me wrong, I like Colin Warner. He's a solid number six in this league. He will give you a 6 or 7 out of 10 performance every single day. There's a reason why he's bounced around franchises, because everybody likes him. They like him as that 12th man on the roster. I think it's debatable whether he's a starter in this league, but nevertheless, that's another debate for another day. There certainly has been a need to bring in a holding midfielder. They tried it with Maximiano, who's coming on loan, the Brazilian from Fluminense. Hasn't quite worked at the moment because he's got a little bit of an injury issue, which, you know, he looked okay today. I went up and watched the team train this morning, and he seemed okay. But Fernando Bob will undoubtedly give this team some experience in that role as well. He's a tremendous distributor of the ball as well. I watched him ping a couple of lovely long balls over the top. And, you know, he's someone that this team has needed for a long time, Carter. It's, you know, balance has been an issue as well in midfield. So I'm excited to see what he's going to bring. But, you know, as I mentioned, he's come from Internacional, one of the top teams in Brazil. He had a bit of an issue, a bit of a falling out with the coaching staff, and was made available, was released from his contract. So obviously Minnesota can sign him because he's a free agent. Mm-hmm. So I think with us having a two-week break after this game against Sporting Kansas City, I think Adrian Heath and coaching staff would prefer him to use that time to get used to the system and regain his fitness. But look, we've seen stranger things. It wouldn't surprise me if he was in the A-team, but I just don't think he's ready to start.
Well, Cal, we certainly look forward to seeing you this weekend, and we appreciate the time and enjoy what's left of the nice weather in Minnesota.
Chaps, thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend.
And we'll discuss off-air where we meet for a pint after the game, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, that is Cal Williams, the play-by-play voice of Minnesota United as they come to Children's Mercy Park on Saturday night. We'll come back and wrap things up, give you all the details on how you can watch, how you can listen to that big matchup for Sporting Kansas City as the Sporting KC show continues right after this. All right, back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. Our thanks to Andrea and Ireland White, who joined us in the first segment. If you haven't watched that video yet of Johnny Russell giving his apparently wonderful-smelling jersey to the 9-year-old birthday girl, you've got to watch that. Although the video won't do the smell of the jersey justice.
Yeah, we don't have that technology quite yet.
Someday. Yeah, it's going to be 5D video out there. Smell everything.
Lucky he was a sub, I guess, from the start. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that cologne mixed with that much sweat if you've been running around for 90 minutes.
Yeah, but that reminds me of... Axe body spray came out when I was in middle school. And it was used as a substitute for showers, not as an add-on. So it doesn't always cover it up, but I guess it's doing okay for them right now.
Maybe that's just the pheromone that Johnny Russell gives off. You know, maybe he just smells.
He's like, I didn't put on any cologne.
That's just my natural musk.
Smell like Dracar Noir or whatever.
Johnny Russell smells like goals, success, and cologne. It's good to be Johnny Russell. So we thank them for joining us on the show. Also, Cal Williams, who smells like something differently entirely. That's neither here nor there, but he gave us a great insight on the Minnesota United team. So maybe for us, Carter, a chance to talk quickly about this matchup. Look, this is a TCB in game for Sporting, right? Go take care of business. Mm-hmm. You're better than Minnesota United. You're in better form than them. You're at home. That doesn't guarantee anything, but you got to go put out a good performance. If you do, you should grab 3 big points.
Yeah, you should. They really should put an exclamation point on a wonderful month of August, make it 4 for 4, and really catapult themselves into – they're already in really good position for that, at least a top 2 seed right now, if they can just continue on this form that they've had. And it's a Minnesota team that gave them some fits last year. They were a tough team to break down last year. And we saw that up in Minnesota again this year, but I had expected it to be more like the second game, which was at Children's Mercy Park 4-1. That was, I think, Shawley started up top in that game, actually. And Sporting were entirely dominant. And this Minnesota United team, I tried to ask Cal about it, but he gave me, you know, kind of went on how playing away is tough for all teams. But they're 1-10-1 away from home. That's just terrible. And they've allowed 50 goals. That's the most in the Western Conference. I just think this is a team that you really need to go in there and get these 3 points. And if they play their game how they have been playing, they should. I mean, they really should, especially if Darwin Quintero's out. I mean, he was out this past weekend trying to just parse through what Cal said. You know, no idea if he's going to play this weekend, but if he doesn't play, this is a Minnesota United team that they need to beat.
Yeah, it's one thing to struggle to get wins on the road. It's another thing entirely to struggle to get any type of result on the road. And so 4 total points out of their 12 away games is by far the worst in all of MLS. Look, if you're Cal, you know, it's a tough spot for him. He's the play-by-play guy for Minnesota United. He doesn't want to bury his team. I get that. And like you said, look, teams do struggle. And I think one of the points that he did make is good, that to be a good away team year after year is something we haven't seen much of, and Sporting is a good example. Last year, 2 wins away from home, really struggled. But this year, 5 wins already away from home and a winning record. But we do see teams at least be able to grind out draws.
Yeah.
And they're not able to do that. At least they haven't been so far this year.
And the flip side for me is they have 8 wins at home. So it's like this is a team that is capable of winning games. 8-4-1 is a very respectable home record. Like that should be a playoff team's home record. And if they pieced together 3 wins on the road, you know, they're looking at a record where they could be fighting for a playoff spot. But it's just really striking to me how drastic that is, their home form versus their away form.
I mean, for reference, 8 home wins, that equals the number that Atlanta United have, and they're leading the Supporters' Shield race
and
right now.
FC Dallas has 8 home wins as well. I mean, they've only been beaten once at home, but that is a good enough home record to be a playoff team. So I guess for Sporting's sake, hopefully those road woes continue. And because there is the other flip side of that, it's MLS, and you feel like some of those numbers even out over the course of time, and maybe they're due for a road result.
San Jose Earthquakes are the worst team in MLS this year, and they only had 1 road win, and they went to FC Dallas, the best team, at least in terms of the record right now in the West, and they got a win.
Yep.
That's all you need. I mean, just hold that score up anytime you want to think that there's any result in this league that is a sure thing. There is no such thing. It will be very interesting to see what Darwin Quintero's status is in this game, because Cal talked about how good he's been. All you have to do is watch the highlights. Hat tricks at home, chipping goalkeepers for fun. He's clever. He's creative. He's got ability. He can be a handful all by himself. So whether or not he plays in the game is going to make a huge difference, I think.
Huge difference. And he played well against Sporting, especially up in Minnesota, yep. I thought.
Had a goal.
It was a handful and really tough to mark for that back four. And so, yeah, he's a huge difference. I mean, without him, they're a completely different team. So that is one to kind of get your Google alerts set up for Darwin Quintero and see if there's any news on him later in the week, because that is he is a special player and really fun to watch as well. Mm-hmm. But for Sporting's sake, I'm sure they'll be hoping that he needs to take one more week off. That might actually benefit Sporting, them having a week off after this game, as Cal said, because maybe they just err on the side of caution. Although they don't have a whole lot of time left in this season to be doing that.
That's true. And if it's a calf injury, I mean, if he's ready to play, I think they'll play him. He's listed as day-to-day, according mm-hmm. to the technical staff at Minnesota United as of today. Now, it's also a big day at Children's Mercy Park on Saturday because it is the second annual Sporting Salutes game held in partnership with Kansas and Missouri military units. Sporting Salutes is a comprehensive military appreciation night recognizing the sacrifices of service personnel and their families across all branches of the United States Armed Forces. The event will run in conjunction with Saturday's home match against Minnesota United, 7:30 p.m. for the kickoff. And, of course, you can get your tickets at sportingkc.com. You can listen to the game right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You can watch it on Fox Sports Kansas City Plus or the Fox Sports Go app. And one of the really cool things they're going to do, a lot of different things that are going to take place. You're going to see it right when you walk into the stadium or out on the Toyota Plaza. You're going to see all kinds of different armored personnel vehicles and things like that that your kids can go check out and look at. There's going to be camouflage overhangs into the walkways. But they're going to be honoring some surviving veterans of World War II from right here in Kansas City, which, let's be honest, there aren't many left.
No.
And we've got 11 of them doing the walkout before the game, which is really going to be cool.
That is so cool. Yeah, Greatest Generation. I mean, that is that is something special right there. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm excited for our pregame show as well, because I think we're showing some of the little short films that they've done on some of these guys, and the company that does that is fantastic. They put together these really cool little shorts, and I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, the organization that helped us find these World War II veterans, it's called PatriotFeatures.org. If you go to that website, PatriotFeatures.org, you can see some of those videos. Like you said, we're going to be showing them as well. Pretty cool. Both my grandparents were part of that generation, fought in World War II, passed away a long time ago. So it's really neat to see some surviving members of that that amazing generation be honored at the game on Saturday. And then, of course, we get to the kickoff at 7:30, and it's all about the soccer. But also, before the game, the players are going to be warming up in these really cool blue camo Sporting tops that will be for sale as well in the gift shop beforehand. Those things are really sharp.
Yeah, they're nice. I like them. The blue camo, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Air Force, that Navy thing, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how that works, I'll be honest with you, but I think they look cool. I know that much.
Yeah, and you can hide in the pool, I guess. I don't know about that, but yeah. they look awesome.
Yeah, you hide in the ocean. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how that works, but they are really cool looking, and the players will be warming up in them, and you'll be able to purchase those at the Sporting Style gift shops and all that. And as we take a look ahead at the rest of the schedule for Sporting Kansas City, Carter, look, I think this is a stretch. The old adage is that you make hay when the sun shines. This is a game we talk about. Sporting needs to take care of business. They've got a few games like that where I think that you can see wins. Their next home game is against Orlando City at San Jose. I think you look at that as a road game that's winnable. At Philadelphia is a tough one, but I think it's a winnable game. You've got Real Salt Lake and the LA Galaxy coming to town. Now, in the middle of all that, after this game, is going to be a really interesting one. Next weekend at the Seattle Sounders, who right now, and you were telling me, I was kind of saying, I don't know if this is really the same type of team that can pull off a second-half comeback the way they did a couple years ago. You were telling me to look out for them. You got a 5-0 victory against LA Galaxy. What is it, 6 wins in a row now?
Yeah.
They're marching up that Western Conference standings. That's going to be an interesting one a week from Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah, that will be really, really tasty. So I don't think Sporting can look too much ahead to it, but I certainly am. And I think that just puts more emphasis on this game as well. to go in and get 3 points. And I'm curious from you, do you think there'll be any lineup changes, or does he keep it rolling with what's been working?
I mean, sure, certainly Peter Vermes knows his team better than I do, but you got a 1-0 victory, a 2-0 victory, and a 3-0 victory. The last two games in particular, no changes to the lineup in those two games. If everybody's healthy and playing the way they are, I'm not sure how you change it. The only change that I could even really envision is Johnny Russell coming back in.
You would think he's going to be in the starting lineup at some point before the playoffs start. But Jurso has been playing really well, though. And
I don't think there's any need to rush it. So I was just looking at these numbers, actually, for Johnny Russell. I think he played 4 minutes at LAFC, bumped it up to something like, 15 minutes, something like that. In this last game, of course, he had the goal as well. Remember that Peter Vermes has said more than once that they're looking for a way to kind of rest him a little bit, considering the fact that he played the winter schedule in the championship last year. So it was 21 minutes against Portland. So they're ramping it up. I don't think he's 90 minutes ready yet. So maybe, you give him 30, 35 minutes this time around and slowly build it back up, while resting his legs a little bit, because, as you said, I mean, what you really want more than anything is a fresh Johnny Russell. Jurso should be fresh right now because he didn't play as many minutes earlier in the season, and he's in good form. So I don't see that happening. I mean, I could see it happening, but I don't predict it. I think it's going to be the same 11. What about you?
Yeah, I think your reasoning's spot on there, and I'm curious if the turf the following week comes into play as well. But, yeah, I think, like you said, no need to rush Johnny Russell back, especially with the reasoning that they're giving right now. Just kind of ramp his minutes back up, and then maybe we'll see him about mid-September or so back into the starting lineup. But Churchill Fernandez is in his best form of the season for sure, and so I think that also gives Vermes a little bit more comfort and maybe a little bit longer leash on Johnny Russell coming back to the lineup because of how well Churchill has been playing. You got Minnesota coming in here, a team that you should dominate the ball against. And so maybe that just gives him a little extra pad in terms of bringing Russell back.
The time that this depth, I think, is really going to be called on, there's one midweek game the rest of the season, and that's the one at Vancouver, Wednesday, October 17th, and that's right before a trip to FC Dallas, which could be a massive, massive game. I feel like you could see the depth get called on in that game in Vancouver. It will be interesting to see how Peter decides to handle that, but you like the depth that they have right now to handle a stretch like that. And I think it's been great for Sporting that they haven't had the midweek games that a lot of these other teams have had.
Oh, for sure. And the good news about that is that they have the weekend off before, so they should be able to go in there and play two games. But like you said, and then that's a long trip, so that'll really test the depth. But you're right. It's been nice to not have these midweek games. I think it's helped them in the last 2 weeks for sure against teams that did have those midweek games. And it was nice to have Namath, Russell, and Quaze coming off the bench as well. It looks a lot stronger bench than it did about a month and a half ago.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show in the books. We will see you Saturday night for Sporting Salutes Night at Children's Mercy Park against Minnesota United.